RandomChatter.com presents
Oliver Queen,
an Arrow podcast.
Now I will fulfill my father's dying wish.
Dedicated to the discussion of the Arrow television series.
Bring down those who are poisoning my city. To do this, I must become someone else. I must become
Green Justice.
Welcome back, everybody, to Green Justice, an Arrow podcast. I'm your host, Jay.
Hello, comrade. I am Josh.
Josh, good to see you. Good to hear you, I guess.
Good to see you. Good to hear you, too.
And you guys have discovered the number one podcast dedicated to the CW television show Arrow, with discussion and commentary on all their various episodes. So, Josh, when I listen to you here on the show, I feel that, you know, you're not as goofy a guy as you make out to be. I think you are smart and funny and lonely, too. And I know that because that's what I see when I look in the mirror.
So I can't laugh in a Russian accent. It's just...
single tear. That rendition was from this episode of Arrow, Keep Your Enemies Closer.
You got caught me off guard on that one. That was good. So yes, very serious.
What else can you tell us about it?
Well, Keep Your Enemies Closer was originally aired. I can never say originally aired on November 13th of 2013. It was written by Ben Sokolowski and Beth Schwartz, and it was directed by a guy who had previously directed three other episodes of Arrow, among other shows. A guy named Guy. Guy B was the director. I don't know which ones he's directed. I didn't look that up. But
he had done the second Huntress episode. I saw that. The Huntress Returns one.
Oh, now if I remember, the second Huntress episode was the one I preferred over the first one.
Yes.
Wasn't it?
Yeah, I think so. We both did. That was the one where she basically has to end up fighting Oliver so that, Oliver's trying to save her dad, and she ends up, I guess, mortally wounding him very deliberately or something like that before she left. I guess you can't mortally wound someone just a little bit. I guess by the fact that they are mortally wounded means that they will die.
Yeah, so. Yeah, and yes. But it was a deliberate mortal wound. So.
Yes. How about that? That's good.
It was a deliberate wound. Well, let me run down just briefly what this episode was about. There were more than one character in it, although it was definitely focused on one character on our Arrow team. But so Amanda Waller, who is a character that also shows up in the comic, although looks much different in the comics. Amanda Waller sends these Argus agents to kidnap Diggle. They're very successful at it, too.
He went down like a sack of potatoes in this one.
Yes, he did. It was very quick and easy, at least for them. So they kidnap him to let him know that Lila, his good friend Lila, has.
I'm sorry. Did you say his girlfriend Lila?
Well, I said good friend.
Good friend. Okay.
Girlfriend slash more to come on their relationship.
Ooh. Spicy.
She's disappeared after that. She was looking for Deadshot in Moscow, and she's now disappeared. And so she did what anybody would do when they need some help from somebody. They drug them and kidnap them and take them away.
Oh yeah.
Or you can call them on the phone. That works sometimes too. But
yeah, but Diggle, he doesn't know the number. He's not going to answer it.
That's true. That's true. Unidentified. So it's just easier that way. I've found that some timeshare people have been contacting me in the same way. So. So, luckily for Diggle, he has a rich friend who can cart them all off to Russia. Team Arrow is headed to Russia in Ollie's jet with an unexpected passenger because, of course, Isabel Rochev, she decides to tag along. So well, whoops.
Yeah.
But he can't really say no. So she does have to come along. Now, I guess the cover story was that he was going on a business trip for Queen Consolidated.
They're partners, she felt that she needed to come along.
Exactly. I'm sure she had nothing else on her mind. But anyway, so they get there and come up with a plan to go in and to save Lila. And Diggle is going to do the dirty work on this one. But of course, his friends have his back. That was good. That was a very nice ending scene we'll talk about. Meanwhile, back in Starling City, Thea, she decides to break up with Roy because, she's told that it's going to hurt her mother's case by her mother's lawyer. She breaks it off with Roy, who is very surprised by this. Although I don't know, their relationship hasn't exactly been the perfect romantic movie, but that's okay. It all works out for him. So
yeah, I mean, at least they found each other. They seem to be doing pretty well, and I think they will weather this storm here based on what happened in the episode. So
I think so too. So well, when thinking about how to explain this episode, I didn't think there was going to be all that much to it, but actually it was more complex than I was anticipating. But
let's see, no scenes with the Lances, Laurel or her father in this one, but plenty of stuff on the island / boat. A lot of stuff here, like you said, in the trip to Russia. They just pack so much into each of these episodes, it seems like.
Yeah, they do. Am I thinking this wrong? Was Detective Lance in it just once at the police station?
Oh, I'm sorry, you're right.
Last week?
No, he was in the police station, right? That's right. He arrested Roy. There was that one shot. Thank you for reminding me. Yes, you're
correct. Oh, that's all right. I couldn't remember if that was last week or this week. And, of course, he was in the small product placement. I mean, side story, Blood Rush. So
Blood Rush, yep. That's right. I forgot to put that in the show notes. But, yeah, the second episode of Blood Rush was shown during this, and you can watch that online in the with its product placement. But, hey, that's okay. That's cool. And then you found an interesting story about the ratings for Arrow, which seem to be doing pretty well.
Yeah, I wanted to point out that this episode, Keep Your Enemies Closer, I got off that window. Okay, Keep Your Enemies Close. Keep Your Enemies Close. Sorry, Closer.
No, you're right.
All
yeah.
Right. I should have just gone with it either way. Anyway, it was a series high in adults at 18 to 34 and men 18 to 34 for ratings. So it's gaining a following.
Yeah, well, that's cool,
and I'm happy to hear that, and I see a lot of buzz for it online, and pretty much all of it that I've seen is positive. I hear a lot of people talking about it on Twitter. I see a lot of women talking about it. Mm-hmm. Which how could you not with when you look like Stephen Amell, but it's growing. I think more by word of mouth than promotion, I guess. I mean, I don't have any evidence really of that other than just what I experience. But I'm not really seeing any extra promotion for this than I was before. So I think it's just people are starting to see how good it is.
I'm hearing a couple spots on the radio for it. I don't know if that's more than it used to be, because a lot of the time I'm listening to my iPod, so I'm not necessarily – like if a commercial comes on, I'm usually switching radio stations. I'm not just hanging out on a station because I don't have it on at work or anything like that. So, I'm going to say that I hated this episode because if I do, I understand that listener Armando is going to make me a burger, not just like buy me a burger. He said he's going to make me a burger. So
I think you should stick with that assessment then, because I don't know, the way he talked about it, it sounded delicious.
It does. He tells me I can name my flavor, so I just don't know where he's going to be shipping it from. So, but that sounds pretty good. Now, unfortunately, I really enjoyed this episode. As I'm not going to repeat the same thing I've said the last few weeks. I don't feel that this episode was better than last week's. I think this was a really, really strong, good episode. There was a lot of stuff going on, but League of Assassins last week was really, really good. So I'm gonna.
I agree with you. Stay with that assessment. Yeah, I agree with you. I think it was a nice little pace adjustment for him.
A breather, sort of.
Oh, yeah, kind of. And now, if you ask Stephen Amell, it wasn't. If you ask Stephen Amell, it keeps ramping up each week. But I felt like this was a bit of a breather. You know, you got to have a ballad in between your big heavy metal rock songs and powerful guitar solos. You got to have a ballad so they can take a break and then start building up momentum again, because now is the time to do that.
A palate cleanser, as they call it.
this was the cracker of the of the season.
Well, I don't know that I'd go that low, but no, I mean, you can't continually make one thing more than another, because then there's no contrast to it. You know, like you say, you kind of build up and then you have to come back just a little bit, you know, take a running start, and then boom, you can go off again. And by contrast, you can make, you know, episodes appear to be better than ones that were on before and stuff like that.
Yeah. Well, not only that, but when you try to up yourself each time, I was going to say run the risk. I'm not even sure it's a risk. It's a for sure that you're going to get to a point when you just can't outdo yourself anymore. You've got to, like superhero movies, you've got to stop making sequels with more and more villains in them. It just gets too crowded and too crazy. So, I think it, by no means am I giving this one a bad rating. It was an excellent show. And I like how it really focused a lot more on Diggle than Oliver this time, because it gave us a good chance to get prepared for what's to come, because I think it's some really good stuff.
Yep, exactly. So the title of this episode, Keep Your Enemies Closer, comes from the old quote, which some of you may not know. It's keep your friends close and your enemies closer. That's what this episode really does here. So I want to go right out of the gates here. I want to start talking about what enemies are being kept close. And, of course, the one that springs to mind, at least for me, is the most obvious, is Deadshot. So Diggle gets to Russia. He's trying to figure out how to infiltrate this prison. So they decide to make him actually get him arrested so he can get inside, because he knows Lila's in there and she was looking for Deadshot. Now, what he doesn't know is Deadshot is in the prison, right? Like, he doesn't know that before he sees him in that meat locker, right?
Yeah. No, he didn't know that before. I think he was just expecting to come and get Lila, thinking she had failed looking for Deadshot.
She had failed this Deadshot. So Diggle is kind of saved by this guard that is working for Oliver's contact outside of the prison. But then he is killed by an icicle to the back, because Deadshot is a dead shot with any weapon. I mean, this guy... that's his, you know, if he had a superpower, that would be his superpower, right? He doesn't miss. And that's a very important fact about this character, which I'm glad they're exploiting on the show here. So Diggle is, you know, I should shoot you right now. And Deadshot seems like, well, but I'm the only one who knows where your girlfriend is, so you won't do that. And so, you know, they make the uneasy alliance, right? The good guy teaming up with the bad guy, because for right now it's the most expedient thing. But as we come down to the end of the episode, Diggle just can't bring himself to shoot Deadshot. And I thought that was an interesting, a fun little exchange there, that Deadshot or Diggle initially said, you know, when Deadshot asked him, you know, what makes me sure that, you know, you won't kill me right now? And Diggle told him, honor. And then at the end, Diggle couldn't bring himself to shoot Deadshot. And he had that great line where he says, you know, honor is not just a thing you can turn off and on. So I thought that was, you know, that was a really interesting line. It it kind of it really puts Diggle's character, like, that is the line that defines Diggle's character. He is, for as much as he talks about hating Deadshot and wanting him dead because he killed his brother and, you know, all the things that he's done, in the end, he is an honorable man, and that's why he is constantly doing, you know, the right thing, the heroic thing, right there along with Oliver on the team.
Yeah, and it's what makes him a hero. And we've talked about that before with Oliver and in his kind of transition into being the hero. But the Diggle, he there's no way he could have done that. I mean, but I don't think he even realized that himself until that moment.
Mm-hmm. Oh, he was ready to do it. I mean, you could see he was kind of seething through the entire sequence. You know, that kind of cold rage that was burning, you know, just under the skin.
Oh, yeah. And the conflict that he had to work with Deadshot in order to, you know, save Lila. Mm-hmm. He did a really good job in this episode just showing that pain that he was feeling in that conflict. But I'm glad that they didn't end up doing something darker, which, you know, I mean, obviously gives him a chance to bring Deadshot back, but it also gives a chance to show what a good guy Diggle is. And it's really good that Oliver has had him. I think that's one of the reasons that he's become the man he has.
Mm-hmm. Well, I feel bad that I wrote Deadshot off on his first appearance, you know, when he was killed. You know, it's like, I was like, wow, you know, they had him on and they did away with him really quickly, but that was kind of cool. And I think you were like, I don't know that he's dead. And I was like, well, he sure seemed like he was dead, but, you know, that's the whole comic book thing for us here, right?
Well,
you know?
I have to say it was a rare Jay moment where you were wrong about the character and where they were going. I mean, usually you're dead on, so to speak.
Well, I got to say, I'm loving Michael Rowe's portrayal of Deadshot. And this episode, this is probably the most, probably the most screen time he's had in any one episode, as well as the most dialogue. And he was just kind of chewing up the scenes in this. He was just really juicy, and he didn't have his glow-in-the-dark Terminator eye for most of the episode. He was just wearing a Nick Fury eye patch there for a while, which I thought was kind of cool.
I had to go back and check to see when he got that, because I didn't catch it the first time around.
The red eye?
Grabbed it off one of the – yeah.
Oh, yeah.
When they were escaping the prison.
Yeah.
And then I saw that he had it on. I'm like, wait a minute. Where did he get that? I mean, at first I thought he just like pulled it out of his pocket or something. But that made me think that maybe he had been in there on purpose. But then I went back and I saw that he had found it in the shelf, which it just conveniently happened to be on the shelf that they were walking by. But that's okay.
Right. Well, and luckily the guy was trying on the jacket and it wasn't on the evidence shelf, because I think if the jacket was stuck on the evidence shelf when it blew up, I don't think Deadshot's eyepiece would have survived that. I mean, obviously it's pretty strong.
That's a good point.
It was right there.
Yeah, maybe it was maybe it was singed a bit. It had a little crack in it.
Yeah.
And he had to take it to the Apple store and see if he could get him to fix it for free and if it was still under warranty with Apple Care or something. But anyway, I can look past the convenience of finding it. But I did have to go back and check to make sure that he didn't just have it with him all along.
There were a few things like that in this episode that I felt were kind of, you know, convenient sort of elements. But I don't know. The show puts out so much for us in every episode. I feel it's like, okay, I could sit here. Oh, wow, we're already on to the next thing. Okay, it doesn't give me time to go, wait a second. You know, it's engaging me into the next thing. It's like, hey, look, here's a piece of bacon. Why is the piece of bacon here? Oh, look over here. There's a hamburger. You know, and it's just they keep redirecting you. onto something else that's cool. They don't give you this is probably
distracting people with bacon.
Yeah, I was gonna say it's probably a horrible analogy for this, but
no, actually, I really liked it. It made me kind of hungry.
They
keep talking about burgers.
Yeah, we'll have to get a whole meal cooked up here by the end of the episode. But no, it's they don't give you time to dwell on how poorly or greatly they accomplish something, because they literally are throwing you into the next subplot or bringing in another guest star or, revealing something that we didn't know before. Like, for example, Lila, who we knew that John Diggle had worked with in the military previously, and that's how they knew each other as far as we knew, found out that, well, they were actually married for a little bit, which was like, whoa, hello. That was kind of a shocker. I did not see that coming. I don't know if maybe I just wasn't paying attention to stuff on that. But I figured that they would probably, start dating at some point here, which it looks like they're doing by the end of the episode. They've.
Oh, yes. Yes. She was locked up all night to have fun. She was locked up to get lucky.
There, a lot of characters were getting lucky, but I think that Diggle and Lila are the only ones that come out at the end of the episode in a better place.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
they seem to be having a slightly healthier relationship than some of the other characters. Maybe Thea and Roy come in like us in a close second, but like you said earlier, they're not necessarily the healthiest relationship, but they're young.
But at the end, though, when after the relations, when Lila goes into the other room to start fixing waffle or pancakes or something, I don't know.
Yeah, it was a blueberry pancakes.
He gets on his phone on that he had courtesy of Bing, apparently.
Bing.
he's looking for Hive, but he's doing it kind of behind her back. I don't know if it's behind her back or if it was just he just was thinking about it because he was alone. But
right.
So, we can talk about Hive later on. But yeah, I think you're right. I mean, I think that was a good positive step for their relationship. And they obviously seem pretty close. But
yeah.
He's obviously got more on his mind.
Right. Well, I will also tell you, never, ever, 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 never pull out your phone when you're in bed with a lady, because that just – no good. So he's doing a good job, right? She leaves.
Wait, hold on. Let me write this down.
You can take a note. Right. Never, ever.
Never.
Never, ever.
Ever,
never. Never. Never.
What if I really want to check Twitter? No?
No.
Okay.
Don't. Yeah, don't tweet either. That would be.
Just hanging out.
Woohoo. So, okay. So what other enemies are being kept close? So this got me thinking about all the other things that we saw in the episode. So I'm going to posit some enemies being kept closer here. Oliver and Isabel. Is Oliver trying to keep Isabel closer or, kind of hold her at bay at least? Because
well, closer than Deadshot, that's for sure.
Hello. Oh, I will tell you, after the moment of coitus here in this episode, I think we got to give Oliver the nickname Speedy. Hello. Because he's like, I only have a few moments. And she's like, I'll make it quick. Boom, cut to, hey, baby, I got to go. She's like, do I look like someone that needs to cuddle? It's like, what? They didn't even put a commercial break in between that. That's how quick it was.
Speedy. Okay, that was good. Coincidentally, by the way, a moment of coitus is a name of an episode later on in the season. So
that is going to be the name for my band. I'm going to make a band called Moment of Coitus. If anybody else, if anybody takes that name, I'm going to sue you. Just to get back. So Isabel's had this kind of confrontational relationship with Oliver from a business relationship standpoint. And I don't think he went into the trip or anything like that with any expectation that this was going to happen. It seemed like kind of a moment of opportunity. They both realized that they were, the same. They both come from kind of the same stock. They both got something in their backstories that is causing them pain and loneliness and, you know, making them strive to be better people. We just know what Oliver's is. We don't know what Isabel's is. And so that kind of made me think maybe Oliver – or maybe Oliver's trying to keep her close, or maybe actually it's the other way around. Maybe she's trying to keep Oliver closer because
– That's what I was going to say.
She feels it's a strategy of her some kind.
Yeah. Yeah, I think maybe that was more on her mind than what he was thinking about.
Hmm. Okay.
So, but that, it could be. I mean, she didn't even worry about that connection.
Okay, so let me bring up some. I didn't catch this in my first go through on the episode. So usually. I watch the episode when it airs, and then I watch it again before we do the show here so that I can, you know, kind of take notes. And I try to, you know, now that I know what's happening in the entire episode, I can go back and listen for stuff. So it's like if a character teases something earlier in the episode, it's like, oh, that they said that because this is going to happen or whatever. So they're talking about they're sitting there drinking vodka. Oliver's speaking Russian. And she obviously understands what he's saying. I mean, her last name's Roshev, so which sounds Russian, at least to me, or some derivation of that, which I think is probably correct. She indicates that she was raised in Russia until she was 9. She doesn't say by her parents. Then she says she was adopted by a family and moved to America. So my question is, that seems really innocuous right on the surface. You know, she's just kind of, telling her story. It'd be like, you know, Bruce Wayne going, yeah, you know, my parents were killed when I was young. And, I was raised by my butler. And it's like, oh, you know, that's too bad. That happens to a lot of people, I guess. Yeah, but they don't freaking become Batman, you know, from it. But so.
Does that happen to a lot of people?
Oh, yeah. I got tons of friends.
raised by their butler.
Right, right. Well, maybe a nanny or something like that, you know, not quite,
That does seem a little odd though, doesn't it? Now that you say that, that didn't even occur to me.
Like if you were just telling that to someone, it's like, okay, that's, you know, okay, fine. Right. So she was Russian. She was raised, she got adopted, but why was she adopted? What happened to her parents? Who adopted her? Why is all of a sudden she in this episode, or this season? Like, where did she come from? What is her goal for this season? And there is, you know, there's a lot of stuff that we've teased about. They've talked about how there are multiple, well, at least two major villains kind of for the season. And I think you will probably agree with me in saying Brother Blood is one of them, right? Do you agree?
Absolutely.
He's going to be a major player this season.
Oh yeah, especially after the mask incident.
The mask incident, yes. So, who is the other like big bad person in the season? And I'm thinking, part of me is like, okay, well, maybe they're talking about Professor Ivo, right? Because it's in the flashback, so it doesn't necessarily mean that there's two villains, you know, in the present, right? So we've got Brother Blood that's doing stuff in the present day in Starling City, and Professor Ivo, who's kind of being the bad guy on the island, right? But then it kind of got me thinking, who were we talking about last episode?
Well, the League of Assassins.
Right.
You know, and has Ra's al Ghul.
And so we've got right. And we've got this crossover then between stuff from the island, right, with Sarah and the League into the Starling City story. And I'm just wondering if I'm not saying that Isabel is like related to Ra's al Ghul, because that seems kind of obvious, actually, if I were to extrapolate this. But it also was just used in The Dark Knight Rises, with his daughter Talia kind of infiltrating Wayne Enterprises to, bring it down from the inside and stuff like this. But might Isabel be related into the League in some way, perchance?
Hmm.
I don't know.
I guess it's possible. And they would, I mean, anything's possible. They can pretty much write, you know, whatever they want and kind of explain it. And in a good way. I mean that in a good way, but...
she comes from circus folk.
Carnies.
I hate those people.
The only thing is, I think she's kind of had the opportunity to take him down, if that was kind of what was the intention. I guess maybe not. She tried to take over the company, and he kind of blocked it, so she didn't fully take it over.
And but, she feels like she's – I mean, I think she might feel like she's stuck now, right? Because, okay, I can't take it over, so now we get – I'm stuck being a partner, and that was not fitting into whatever her plan was because, you know, why was she coming in to – take this over? And it could be just because, you know, she's lonely and, you know, she needs her clown needs a friend or something. I don't know.
Well, I guess so. I think there's definitely more to her. I don't know if you'd call it a relationship, but her connection now with Oliver that, maybe that wasn't the best choice of words either, but, but I think there's something more to it. I think she's got something more in mind than whatever he thinks is going on. I tend, at least based on how he acted in this episode, I tend to think that he really did think it was just kind of a whoops. Yeah. What did I do?
I slipped, but, and look what happened.
So. Darn Russian vodka.
Yeah.
But I could be wrong about Oliver, but I don't think either one of us is wrong about her. I think there's something deeper to all of that, that mm-hmm. she told him and how she interacted with him. So,
right. Okay. So, then one of the other, keeping your enemies closer is, Oliver and Sarah in the flashback. There was a lot of kind of flip-flopping in this, and I was really paying attention to these scenes much more closely on my second viewing. So it starts out, I think the last thing we had seen was her kicking Oliver, and then kind of the next thing that happens, she says, prisoners, you know, don't talk, or something along those lines, and she's got the big knife, and that's kind of where we open up again here in this episode, and Professor Ivo comes in and starts interrogating him, and she's kind of, you know, giving him like subtle cues to like not reveal everything. So he starts lying about who he is and not really, you know, he kind of tells the truth about how he got there, but, you know, doesn't, you know, say a lot. And so she makes it look like she's actually, you know, she has to be working with Professor Ivo, but she's, you know, helping Oliver out here and going to get him to talk to his friends again, which, yay, Shadow and Slade are alive, which we had figured, right? We hadn't seen anybody.
Ish.
Yeah, Slade's not doing he's got burns on him, but then it's like, oh, you know, you're cold. We will share body heat to, you know, keep you warm. It's like, not too bad. Nice work if you can get it. And he was kind of two-faced, though, wasn't he? With his
yeah, a little bit.
I couldn't tell what she was rubbing on him at first. I thought she was like just rubbing the burn on his face, and
ooh.
I'm thinking,
oh no, that's not a good
that
idea.
Looks
no.
like it would hurt. But then I realized she was like rubbing like some kind of mud, or, you know, possibly hopefully actually not excrement, even though he said it smelled like puke. I'm guessing it was kind of some medicinal mud that she put together or something like that.
Yeah.
So but then we see Sarah kind of turn the tables again on Ollie, and, you know, basically, you know, get him in trouble with Professor Ivo, who actually knows who Oliver is at that point. So, again, I'm not sure what – there's so many things. It's like, well, we know where they end up, but how many iterations of – on the island, off the island, friends, enemies, do they have to go through here before they
He went through this a lot in the first season, too, on the island. He wasn't sure who he could trust, and then he thought he knew, and then he thought he didn't. And so, I mean, obviously he's growing some big trust issues being on this island because he doesn't know who. But you mentioned about how Ivo knew Oliver because he called him by name.
Yes.
And, you know, my first thought is probably what most people thought is, well, you know, Sarah told him.
Right.
But it didn't seem like she really wanted anybody, including Ivo, to know she knew him.
Oh, good point. Yeah, that is true.
I'm wondering if he actually knew that because of Sarah, or if there's something else going on, something related to something maybe with Robert Queen, or maybe something else entirely. But I'm not convinced that Sarah was the one that told him his name.
Right. Well, because you remember Robert Queen.
Surprised.
Yeah, Robert Queen was going to be traveling to China to talk to some people in China that they had some business with, which I can't quite remember, but I don't think that was like a ruse. I think there was actually, you know, something that was going on there.
Well, they were gonna warn. It was either warn them about Merlin or ask them to help them go against Merlin or something like that. It was somebody within that organization that they were in. And I think he mentioned them by name. I think he mentioned who it was by name.
Okay.
And I don't think it was Ivo or anything like that.
Oh, no. His name hadn't been brought up last season, definitely.
No. And I could be totally wrong about them mentioning the name, but it still could be related.
Oh, yeah. And the other thing, I mean, now that I'm kind of thinking about it, too, is, you know, I mean, Oliver Queen is probably a pretty well-known individual. I mean, definitely in Starling City, but, you know, probably outside of that a little bit. And, you know, I would think Professor Ivo, you know, he seems to be an American, would probably, you know stuff like that. I don't know. You know, it's like, you know, if you were to see some celebrity and they were pretending to be someone else and you're like, okay, yeah, but I know totally who you are, Jessica Simpson, you know, or whoever, you know, not that you'd find Jessica Simpson, you know, on a island, somewhere.
It could happen.
Yeah, possibly, I guess so. But obviously, you know, Oliver has known that Sarah's around. Where a year later, she makes reference to the fact that she's learned a lot of things in the last year that she didn't expect to learn. So she's obviously had a lot of indoctrination in with the League of Assassins. So we'll see. We'll see what happens with that. But again, it's like, all right, we kind of know. We think we know what the end point is. And, you know, it always seems like, oh, it should be just simple. It's just an A to B. But you don't realize that we're going to have a lot of steps before we get to where the characters are, you know, in the present day. So there's a lot of room for us to, you know, think we know what's going on. And then for them to surprise us with things like this, with this, with Sarah kind of turning the tables on Oliver. What about Ivo? Is he keeping his enemies closer? Is he keeping Sarah close for some reason? Why is Sarah working with him? The last thing that we saw chronologically, I guess, was the fact that he rescued her and kind of offered to have her help him change the world. And that was, you know, the year prior to where we are in the flashbacks now. So he was obviously in the area around Lian Yu and picked her up. And then has been spending a year, I guess, traveling, looking for this island with this submarine and these Japanese soldiers and this super soldier serum, which is going to make a bunch of Captain Americas, except that I'm getting my franchises mixed up now. Getting a little confused.
Well, that's what they said it was, genetically altered stuff. But
help with healing and stuff, right? Isn't that what they were talking about? It helps heal you quicker and provides
makes you stronger too, I think they said.
What character do we know that could use some healing, not just the sexual kind, and in the comics is, you know, kind of super strong and has a healing, well, kind of a healing factor? Slade.
Oh, in the show he needs to be healed. Is that what you're saying?
In the show he needs to be healed. Yes. Because he's pretty, I mean, he, I think if he doesn't get some medical attention soon, he's going to die. I mean, that's the...
I hadn't even thought of that.
That's the whole thing. And, of course, they don't, you know, on the island right now, Slade and Shadow do not know what they have, right, with this body that they found and the location that they know of.
And you don't think they know anything about it?
I don't think so. I mean...
No, why are they even on the island? Were they there to stop...
Slade was on there to stop fires. And his ex-partner, and then Shadow, I think, was on there to either save. She got kidnapped because her dad was needed by fires, right? Because I don't think she was there for her dad, but fires, I think, kidnapped her and brought her there to make sure her dad.
But he was just there to stop fires, huh?
I think so.
Okay. All right.
But, you know,
again, they never said, but yeah, I mean, that's what I'd always assumed. But until thinking about this, did maybe they do know what's on there? Maybe Fires knew what was on there, but I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I think Fires just was kind of using as that military base because he was trying to shoot down the plane and everything. And that's kind of why he was there. It was to shoot down the jet that was supposedly carrying. Queen's associate to the meeting in China that Merlin... I think we assume, because I don't think there was any specific proof that it was Merlin that called in basically the hit on that, but in the first season, so... But
So many questions.
I know. I think these are good questions. It's... they provide a lot of answers on the show. It's not like Lost where they just keep raising this kind of stuff and like, we'll never know. We might find out some stupid thing at the sixth season that who cares about that? That's not what I wanted to know.
But they provide answers, but then they give us more questions to think about and keep us entertained. So
which is cool.
That's good.
Yeah. Okay. So here's a question for you going back to the Russia storyline, if you guys listen to our Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case Files podcast, you will have heard this there as well. But this was the second superhero show this week that took place in Russia. And the second superhero show that mentioned Tahiti. Let me just bring this up real quick while we're talking about this. So as fans of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. know, Tahiti keeps getting mentioned as, quote, a magical place on that show because Coulson supposedly has visited Tahiti, and that was where he got healed after being killed by Loki in the Avengers. In this episode, when Isabel confronts Team Arrow on the tarmac and says, "Where are you guys going?" Felicity, of course, just blurts out, I think the first thing that comes to her mind, she says, "Tahiti." And... I'm pretty sure that was a deliberate reference to Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I'm going to go on record. I don't know that there will be any way that we would know this unless, like, one of the writers or producers or somebody comes out and says that. But it seems too coincidental to not be them kind of poking fun at all this talk about Tahiti on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. because, you know, as we pointed out, I think it was last week on our podcast for that. It's become like a t-shirt that says Tahiti, it's a magical place. You know, I mean, people are doing stuff like that. It's a meme almost, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it could be, you know, and I know they filmed this quite a while ago. And they could have added it, I suppose, or they may have known, but I think it was probably filmed after, I think it was filmed before Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. started, but I'm just guessing that. I don't know any of that for sure, either way, it was fun. It was a fun reference regardless.
Yeah, definitely. So, the question I wanted to pose to you was, does Deadshot now know who the Arrow is, do you think? Oliver's not really being careful about this. And
no.
If he's not, if he's not careful, everyone's going to know.
With Felicity's excuses, you know.
Oh, well, those are ironclad excuses. There was no way that anybody would see through anything that she says.
That was one of the better, one of the good lines when he's walking around. We're going to have to work on your excuses.
She's like, I know.
That's a good question. Why do you think he would know?
Well, I'm trying to think of like all the times Deadshot's been on the show. I mean, he fought Arrow in his first outing when Arrow basically shot him in the eye with an arrow. And I'm trying to remember what their meeting was. And, you know, he knows John Diggle. And so I would think he knows that Diggle's been working with this Hood. And then, you know, Diggle shows up and he keeps, you know, he calls out to Oliver by name a couple times during the escape.
Diggle does.
And I just feel like, you know, it's one of those things like, how can Detective Lance not know after knowing that Felicity's working with the Hood and that Diggle's working with the Hood, but he also knows that Felicity works for, you know, Felicity works for Oliver and Diggle works for Oliver. It's like, duh, let's put it all together. I don't know. And, you know, in the comic books, and you're probably more aware of this than I am, but I mean, Oliver Queen doesn't really have a secret identity. I mean, he's pretty much out there. People know that he, you know, is the CEO of this company or was the CEO of the company because at one point he gives away his money. But, you know, everyone knows he's Green Arrow. It's not like it's a big deal.
Right. That's exactly right. So there is no – and has it – I guess it hasn't always been like that, has it? That was more of a...
You mean in the comics?
Yeah, that was more of an 80s incarnation of Green Arrow, wasn't it?
Well, I think, in the 60s and 70s and before that, you know, it was always, you know, you're just...
Every superhero has a secret identity,
right? That's just what you did. Because everybody's doing it.
To do.
Yeah. Duh.
So I see I would be... Well, I don't know. I don't know if that would fit this show for everybody to know right now. At some point, maybe, but I don't know. Not right now. He isn't being careful enough, though. I mean, he was certainly paying a lot more attention in the first season. He'd even set it up so the police thought it was him, and then they proved it wasn't.
Right.
Because, you know, Diggle put on the Hood to make it look like it was him. But I don't know. I suppose from like you said, if he kept saying Oliver's name, he may have picked it up in this episode, but I don't know. And I he strikes me as a villain that doesn't really have any reason to reveal that to anybody, at least not until he needs it, because he's really just a hired assassin. You know, I mean,
there's no motive that would drive him to. Use that for anything. Now, Amanda Waller, on the other hand, knows. And how does she know? Well, they're Argus, right? It's like the SHIELD meets the CIA. I mean, they're everywhere. They probably know all sorts of stuff that's going on. And
yeah, that surprised me, though.
That she was using that information against John to kind of coerce him?
Well, just that she knew.
Yeah.
It surprised me that she knew, but... Yeah, I mean, I guess it shouldn't have surprised me because they seem to know everything.
Right. I'm not crazy about this incarnation of Amanda Waller. I mean, I maybe have 2 minutes to go on, this will be the third live action incarnation of Amanda Waller. The first one was in Smallville and that was played by Pam Grier, a famous actress from a series of.
Ooh. Shaft, yeah.
Shaft and other blaxploitation films from the 70s, as well as Jackie Brown, the Quentin Tarantino film from the 90s. I thought she was a good fit for the character. An older woman, a little heavier, you know, not this young, really. I mean, I thought this actress, you know, I thought she was a fine actress. I don't recall seeing her in anything, though I know she was with the guy that plays Slade. They were in, was it not Spartacus? Is that what they were?
Oh, was that? Oh,
on HBO?
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Something like that?
you make that connection. Look at that. Yeah.
Yeah. But she seemed too young, too thin. In the comic books, Amanda Waller is an older, quite heavy black woman. And she, you know, she's called the Wall for a reason, because like she is immovable. I mean, I just remember issues where, like, you know, she's going up against Batman and arguing stuff with him. And, you know, he's like, okay, well, that's cool. I will take that under advisement, you know, not one to
okay,
sass
well,
back to her.
If I may say, in defense of this character's portrayal, it is the CW.
Okay, right. Yep. Everyone's got to be younger and prettier, huh?
Exactly. So that fits.
Well, and then Amanda Waller also showed up in Green Lantern, the movie, the Ryan Reynolds movie. And that was, I had her name here earlier, and I'm totally going to forget who it is now. I'm just going to go ahead and look it up here while we're talking, because I feel like I need to.
Well, while you're doing that, I will say again in defense, because it's not somebody that is so well known by the general public, that, you know, they would say, geez, that doesn't look anything like Amanda Waller.
Right. That is true.
I would say it still works for me. But I think the other way to portray it, you know, a bigger, more powerful lady, I think that would actually work pretty well too, and be a good contrast to all the good looking mm-hmm. people that my dad still claims, you know, you can't tell anybody apart because they're so good
right.
looking.
That
so, so that, you know, I do think they kind of should mix it up a little bit and, you know, maybe get some less attractive people on there. If they want to call me, I'd be happy to, to come on, you know, just to be a part of one of my favorite shows. So
Angela Bassett, that's who it was in Green.
Oh, Angela Bassett. Well, yeah. certainly not a heavy set.
no,
older, less attractive woman.
Yeah.
But
so as far as Amanda Waller's gone in order, she's gotten younger and thinner as she's gone on. So the next time she appears in the next incarnation, she'll just be a little stick, a little thin stick. So.
Amanda Sticker.
So, anyway, that was kind of cool. And, but yeah, she definitely knows who Oliver is and what she and Diggle are doing. So, they're keeping tabs on this group. Also, you know, and we've talked about this on the show before, the, similarities to the evolution of the Suicide Squad. Amanda Waller was one of the characters that basically ran the Suicide Squad, and Deadshot was one of the founding members of that group. So, definitely room for, you know, something like that to appear on the show as well. Now, you've got a, as we, roll into the close here of the show, you've got a kind of a theory here with Felicity and Oliver that you wanted to share with everybody.
Okay. Well, now this is just a wild, and I don't know, you know, I put theory, I don't know if this is so much a theory as just a thought that I had, but
okay.
You know, obviously, at the end, well, and in the middle, Felicity was a little shaken up by the revelation that Oliver and Isabel were mm-hmm. Having a personal meeting, then at the end, it kind of surprised me that it kind of appeared as if Oliver actually does have some pretty close feelings for Felicity.
Yeah, he says that he can't get involved with anybody right now that he might actually be serious about, because
yeah.
You know, for safety reasons and protection reasons, really, it sounds like.
And that, well, first of all, that kind of shocked me, but in a pleasant way. I'm like, oh, you know what? I'm glad that he has feelings for Felicity, because so do I. But you know, here was my wild and crazy thought.
Okay.
What if eventually? Oh, see, this sounds stupid coming out now, but in my head, it all worked out.
It sounded great in my head.
What if Felicity ends up being Black Canary?
See, now I've heard that theory bandied around. That's very interesting. it would be a surprise. It would definitely surprise me. And I say that because she shows no potential skills to be, I mean, at this point, right? And
right, physical skills.
Right, physical skills in terms of like fighting ability or anything like mm-hmm. that. Now, you tell me this, like, you know, 5 years down the line, could she do that? Oh, sure. But, you know, it would need to be an evolution of the character to get there. I think it
of
is
course.
Much more likely that Laurel would be Black Canary before Felicity would.
Well, I do too, and the way that they're going now, and I don't disagree with that. It just, you know what? Number one, she is already on the team and already kind of knows the thing and has certain skills. Now, granted, not the physical stuff, but number two, there's a bit of a sexual tension going on there with them now. Before, you know, season one, it was just her kind of ogling over those perfectly well-shaped abs glistening with sweat in the light of the Arrow Cave, but now it's obvious that there's kind of a connection between the two of them, and as you know, Black Canary and Green Arrow are in the comics. They're a couple.
Yeah.
So it was just those things. It was just a thought that popped into my head. I don't really see him going with it, but now to me, it could happen. It could be a possibility. So
sure,
just food for thought.
Well, I mean, they changed enough stuff around on the series, on the TV show, from the comics, just to make it, you know, different enough to keep us guessing. It's like we know about all the stuff they talk about. They tease all these names of people and places and organizations and things like that. And it's like, all the comic book fans like, oh yeah, I know all about that, but how are they going to implement it here on the show? And I think that's what keeps people coming back, that, you know, may go, well, yeah, obviously she becomes, you know, Black Canary and then they get together. It's like, what, you know, what's the big mystery in that? It's like, well, how are they going to do that? That's what's interesting. Like this week they mentioned Hive. That was the code name that, Deadshot was hired by to kill Diggle's brother. And let me just do a quick aside here. I never was under the impression that, I guess, unless I missed something in one of the episodes of the first season, that I thought that Diggle's brother was killed on accident. I mean, and again, maybe it's just because I have a comic book background. I assumed that if Diggle's brother was killed by Deadshot, well, he was the reason, you know, he was the hit. Just like Deadshot said this episode, he goes, I don't miss. It's like he wasn't killed by a stray bullet because I was trying to kill somebody else. He was the reason I was hired to hit, you know, I was hired to hit him, not some other guy.
Yeah, I started thinking about that and realized, I mean, I can't really remember I can't remember talking about that. I can't remember the episode when they first revealed that it was Deadshot that had got him. So I don't remember thinking that or not. But
I think they always just said something like, you know, he killed my brother, but they really didn't go into it too much or anything like that. So I felt that was just a little weird in this episode because, of course, I mean, he's called Deadshot for a reason. He doesn't miss. So, but so they mentioned Hive and it's interesting to note that Diggle knew when he typed Hive into Bing that it was an acronym, that he typed in H period, I period, V period, E period, which is...
Well, I think before he had probably tried just the word and it didn't come up. So.
Oh, so we're just seeing the second time that he was doing it or something. Yeah, because Bing would only show up, you know, the right...
They didn't want to show when Bing failed to find the cursor, right. So...
but Hive is an organization that had appeared in the Teen Titans, secret organization, kind of like Argus is, you know, that is made of a bunch of villains and stuff like that. So we'll see, you know, Hive is not necessarily a person, but an organization. So we'll see how that plays out here in this series, I guess. They're making enough changes that, you know, it could be someone's code name. It could be like Queen Bee or something like that, and that could be her code name. I don't know where any of that would come from. So, and then there was also I don't know if you caught this, when the guy at the beginning from Argus when he tases or drugs or whatever Diggle and knocks him out. When he calls it in to Amanda Waller, he calls in as Strike Force X, which actually I was watching the episode with the closed captioning on, and the closed captioning actually says Task Force X, but the guy's audio is actually Strike Force X. Well, Strike Force X still reminded me of Task Force X, which was the proto name for the Suicide Squad in the comic books. So again, another kind of reference for that. So I thought that was kind of cool. And then the one other thing that I wanted to let people know about, I don't speak Russian. I have some friends who speak Russian, but they live in California, and I'm not really in touch with them on any sort of regular basis, and I don't know that they watch the show. Anyway, so I did a Google search just for what Oliver was telling the Russian dude. First, I tried to run some text through, you know, what someone had typed up, what they thought he was saying, and I tried to run that through Google Translate, and I got jack squat for that. That came back as garbage.
You should have tried Bing.
I should have. I did not even think about trying Bing. You know, you are probably right. They would probably pop right up on that. Anyway, I put the text in, and so Kneazev says that they're going to sell us this Russian police truck for cheap. And the bad guy, you know, says something to him in Russian, and Kneazev says something back, obviously talking about the payment. And when the payment gets handed over, the bad guy, you know, basically says stop, and you know, doesn't give him the keys to the car or the truck. So Oliver comes up and whispers something at the bad guy, you know, in Russian. And looking at the translation for it that somebody posted online, now this is only as valid as, you know, this person's answer, but he says, if you do this, meaning if you, you know, don't let us take the car, my people will make you and your children orphans. So, and then Felicity said, hey, what'd you say? And I thought this was a great line from Oliver. He just says, please. But he gave that little wink, which I thought was a really nice moment. You know, he's making light of a very, very, very serious threat that he's obviously just made. Even if you don't know what he's saying, you know, he made enough of a threat. The guy's like, all right, here are the keys. We're going away. You know, so... really nice, nicely written sequence right there.
Well, I have to compliment you on that particular research. That was amazing. So, I think that Argus is going to have to hire you because that was some pretty good investigating.
Well, again, if it weren't for the internet and being able to type in pretty much anything, I would, I'm more stupid in real life, I guess. How about that? So,
I disagree.
Oh, well, thanks, dude. Anyway, that's about it for this week's episode of Green Justice. We had a lot of fun talking about this episode, and I'm looking forward as we move into the back end of the season here. We've got an episode, and then I think we've got a week off for Thanksgiving. And then when they come back in December, I think that particle accelerator is going to be up and running, though I have to worry about some of the protests that are going on out in front of it right now.
Up and running, huh?
What is it? I don't get it.
We'll find out. All right. So, well, I was really digging this episode.
Wow, I see what you did there. Look at that.
But if you enjoy this episode of Green Justice, please make sure you leave feedback for us on iTunes and get a hold of us by email, as some of you have. We really like getting those emails. And thanks again to Armando. I'm looking forward to that burger. even if I did like this episode, that would be fun. Email us at greenjustice@randomchatter.com. Or you can go to our Twitter feed at Green Justice Pod and visit our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/Green Justice Podcast.
And as I mentioned before, you can also check out the other podcast that Josh and I do, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case Files, which is also available via randomchatter.com. And of course, if you enjoy this episode, please be sure to tell all your friends. And remember, if you don't keep listening, you have failed this city.
This podcast is not endorsed by Warner Brothers Television or DC Entertainment. The official website for Arrow can be found at www.cwtv.com. Green Arrow, Arrow, and related elements are copyright DC Entertainment and Warner Brothers Television.